Hello, hello. We are back with the Advocate Next Door. My name is Kelby Balena. I'm here with another episode and here with my wonderful co-host.
Hello, everybody. My name is Margarita Arango.
And today we have a very special guest with us. Her name is Aura Komani. Aura, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you for inviting me.
So you are in a very interesting field, the area of translation slash interpretation. You are actually the person who does the work. You're not feeding it through a machine. You're not working with people abroad. You are the one who actually gets the work. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Now, how does someone get into this field? Because everyone can't just up and translate a document. It does take a certain level of understanding. And language translation is not just about a literal translation of what it says, but also the deeper understanding of what is trying to be said. So how do you get into this area, like education-wise and experience-wise?
Well, to begin with, if you want to be a good translator, a quality translator, you first of all need to have 100% full command of your working languages. And that is not something that you achieve just by miracle or because you're born within a Spanish-speaking or Italian-speaking or French-speaking family. You learn the languages, but you have to study them in full, in depth, so that they are all of them at your fingertips. That is essential.
Which languages, Aura?
I am fluent in four languages. I was born in Venezuela of an Italian immigrant parents, so we spoke Italian at home, and the Italian we spoke was educated Italian. There was no dialect. My parents came from two different parts of northern Italy, so even though each of them had his or her own dialect, because Italy has 32 dialects apart from the Italian language.
Wow, okay. I had no idea.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and they are not dialects, but nowadays they are called languages because they have a grammar, etc., etc. So my parents had different regional languages or dialects, so they were forced to talk to each other in Italian, and that's how I was brought up at home. When I started growing, I don't remember the process, but I would speak Spanish at school with my friends, at childcare, and I found myself being bilingual by the time I started first year at primary school. In the meantime, my mother spoke French, so she would talk to me French every now and then. Life took me to England, where I did 2 years high school. When I left England, I was fluent in British English.
Wow.
So
that seems like a lot of languages in a short amount of time.
Really?
You're like really getting immersed fluently.
And then when I chose to follow a career, I decided that I loved languages, that I loved the actual transition from one to the other, I decided to become a translator. But I wanted to be a professional. And I inquired and I found that there are two schools of interpreters and translators in the world that are top. One is located in Geneva, Switzerland, and the other one is located in Paris, France. And so I applied to Sorbonne, in Paris, simply because I had family in France. It was easier for me to go to France than to Switzerland.
Yeah.
So I applied, then I went to France, and I spent 1 year in the south of France in Aix-en-Provence, polishing my French. The other three were okay. The other three were 100%, but my French was like 90%. So I spent a year down south really polishing it. And then I applied. I sat the admission exam at Sorbonne, and I was admitted. And I spent 4 years in Paris training.
How old were you there? Like, at what age were you able to speak four languages?
I was fluent in three by the time I was 16 when I came back from England.
That's so young.
And these schools are not like colleges. This is a specialty school where you're learning about languages?
No, they're a faculty. Just like you have a law school or a faculty of law or the faculty of medicine.
Okay.
In the Sorbonne, you have the faculty of languages. It's called ESIT, École Supérieure d'Interprète et de Traducteur.
Okay.
And it is one faculty within Sorbonne that trains interpreters.
Okay.
And the same happens in Geneva.
That's curious because I wouldn't even know the first thing about what kind of courses you would take at a school, let alone for 4 years. It's not just a lot of repetition. You're talking about maybe history, culture.
During those 4 years, we had the best teachers ever. For example, we had an engineer who was dedicated to electronics, and he taught us electronics, nothing else, the language of electronics. We had another one who was a doctor, somebody else who was a historian, somebody else who was an economist, somebody else who was in the military. So in those 4 years, we had credits, we had subjects that were taught to us by professionals in their field. And through them, we learned at least the basics of their fields and the language that goes with it. So we would be translating all the time, both in class and as homework. For example, we would be given the user guide for a blender, and we were made to translate that.
Wow.
So we would have to learn the mechanical parts of a blender in the different languages that were required.
Because it's not just that you're learning the language to be able to talk, as you were talking with a friend. You need to be able to learn the professional aspects of the language.
You need to learn the terminology, because you need to call a spade. You cannot call it a shovel if it's a spade. So you need to learn the correct terminology. In order to translate something, you need to understand the subject. There is research involved.
I was looking through TikTok and thought, are there any examples of where you could give somebody something to translate and you may have some trouble translating? So I don't know if you can hear this or see this, but I'll go ahead and play this.
Hello, interpreter. Please introduce yourself to the patient.
Hello, patient 123. My name is John. I'll be interpreting for you today.
Thank you, interpreter. Please let the patient know that initially we thought this was a case of cholecystitis, but after further evaluation and the results from the abdominal ultrasound, it's clear that the gallstone is in the common bile duct, and this is just a classic case of choledochlothiasis. Please also let the patient know that we're either going with an endoscopic retrograde cholangiopancreatography or a laparoscopic cholecystectomy with bile duct exploration. Finally, please let the patient know of the possible risks, including pancreatitis, cholangitis, hemorrhage, or duodenal perforation. Did you get all that?
See, someone claiming to be bilingual wouldn't be able to do it.
That's exactly one of my bones of contention, is that those people who claim they are translators and interpreters, faced with a situation like that, they're stuck.
Yeah.
A professional interpreter, especially if it's a first-time assignment in a subject that is, because let's face it, we are not walking encyclopedias. Life is a learning curve, so we learn every day. And even if you've been in the field for 30-plus years like I have, I'm still learning every day. So what happens when somebody contacts me at work and they say, Aura, I want you to interpret for me day after tomorrow at a meeting. The first thing I will say is, what's the subject? Right. Send me background information. Send me texts, because I need to feed myself with the right terminology, and I prepare. And I do what we call in the profession research, which is very poorly paid, because we only get paid by the hour of interpreting or the hour that I spend on a document. Nobody pays me for the research that happens beforehand in order not to get stuck like that guy. And obviously, experience teaches you a lot. So after 35 years, I'll give an example. 2 weeks ago, I was at a doctor's appointment, and the lady before me didn't speak any English. She approached me and she said, are you bilingual? I said, yes, I am. Can you please help me interpret for me with the doctor? And I ended up going into the consultation room with this lady, whom I didn't know from Adam.
Right. Nice to meet you.
And I ended up interpreting for her, between her and the doctor. Luckily for me, the subject was ingrown toenails. So it wasn't that difficult for me to interpret that session. But typically and ideally, I ask for background information, I ask for terminology, I ask for websites, I ask for places to go to and educate myself before I even attempt to interpret. Because interpreting, if it's simultaneous, which I don't like to do and I don't do simultaneous, is extremely stressful, because things happen as the person speaks, the interpreter, 2 or 3 seconds later, interpret.
So for our general audience, simultaneous is in time. So sometimes
time.
You need a booth, or you need to have headphones or something like that.
Yes, yes. That's what you see, for example, at the United Nations or NATO, when you see those booths with these ladies or gentlemen with headphones in beside those are the interpreters.
That takes a whole different mindset,
I think. To be able to interpret simultaneously, that's a whole lot of skill,
that's talking at the same time,
also knowing exactly the words that you have to say while you listen to them, while you translate them and say them. Oh my god, that's just, it's very, for me that's so hard.
It's very stressful, and that is why they are the best paid in the profession, and they only do 45 minutes and they have a break, and then they have another 45 minutes. They don't do more than 2 or 3 hours a day. It's really stressful.
They're like machines just processing your information. Brain
machine, that's true.
But what you were trained or mostly more comfortable with is consecutive, which is you're taking turns. You hear something and then you spit it out.
And we work from memory. When we do consecutive, it's pretty much like simultaneous. When you work from simultaneous, you're also remembering what the guy is saying. But the process in your brain is much faster in simultaneous. In consecutive, you let the person speak. Before the meeting begins, you warn the person not to talk 4 paragraphs in one go because you're working from memory.
Right. Like that doctor did. He's just spitting out an entire thing. Yeah.
And then I may have a little pad in my hands to write down things like figures and dates and names of places.
Yeah.
So I don't make a mistake with those fundamental pieces of information. I listen to the person stops, and I reproduce what the person has said in the other language.
It's still very hard. You need to be very focused.
It's still very, and I do about an hour. If I'm comfortable with the subject, if I really have mastered the terminology in that area, I can do an hour and a half, no more. Because after that, your brain starts failing. You start saying stupid things. And when that happens, you say to the client, okay, I need a break. 5 minutes. Go out, walk, take a cup of coffee, disconnect completely, and somehow your brain resets itself. It's like pushing the refresh button.
Yeah.
They haven't invented the machine yet that can replicate the exactitude of the human brain to understand and reproduce small nuances. So even nowadays, people who use machines to translate, yes, you can feed 200-300 pages into a machine and it'll come out at the other end, I don't know, in 2 hours, maybe less, I don't know, because I never used the machines. All I know is that at the end of that process, you need a human being to review.
I think I visited your office and I saw that you had different dictionaries for different subjects, French to Spanish, Spanish, French, Italian, Spanish, all sorts of combinations.
Yes.
And very few people know that there are dictionaries in these topics because one word could be one thing in construction, but a completely different thing in technology.
Yes.
Yeah.
Initially, when I was in the UK, after graduation, I moved to the UK again. I used to work in Glasgow for an international translation company. I became a translator for the Minister of Defense. I signed the Official Secrets Act back then, and I used to work for them, for a company that worked for the Minister of Defense. I translated, for example, certain specification manuals for the Exocet back then. We're talking 1980, 81. The Exocet that was used in the, I believe, in the Falkland Islands as a missile, I translate some of that stuff.
Wow.
So that was extra confidential. That's why I had to sign the Official Secrets Act. But I've gone from there into medicine, into biology, subjects that I really like and that I have studied a lot about. But then you are given a project. I'll never forget a project for an arbitration between Peru and a company that was had to do with the production of ethanol. I had to translate an expert report that was huge. And in order to translate that, I needed a day and a half of research because I had to learn about power transmission, the establishment of our power plant to produce power to transmit to the factory that turned the sugar cane into ethanol, the actual construction of the factory itself. You can imagine the sheer amount of terminology that I had to not only learn but understand. And that's what makes my job fascinating because every time I'm given something to translate or an interpreting session, it's like buying yourself a new book.
Right.
Or going to a new movie.
It's fascinating. That's true. I really admire translators, to be honest, Aura, because for me, that's very hard skill to develop. Not everyone can develop it. Even if you speak the language and you think you're bilingual, sometimes the slang, the terminologies, you just don't have at all.
Right.
You know, but translators do. That's also why just running the text through Google Translate or whatever, yes, okay, that will help, but you would not capture the essence of the text as a translator would.
One thing I've noticed is anytime I use Google or any kind of other program that translates some text is that it won't always understand what you're saying because maybe you yourself are not being clear. And I think that's the beauty of the translator is that you're not just translating for the sake of translating. You're trying to understand exactly what it is I'm trying to say and spit it back in a different language. And the issue can be that some people may not use the best grammar. They may use slang. They may use terminology that might not be correct. And here you are now trying to interpret what is being said. So doing your research really helps to get that interpreted or translated back for everyone else to understand. That's one of the reasons why so many people who have used Google Translate or some other tool have experienced a bad translation, have experienced that this is not exactly what I wanted to say, or this one term will change everything.
You are dealing with somebody's thinking, whether it's in writing or spoken. The first thing you have to understand is where they're coming from, what they're trying to say. You have to have enough general culture to also understand subtleties that are not on the surface necessarily.
See, that's something that a computer is not going to do.
The computer is not going to do it. The Google is not going to do it. For example, the typical mistakes in machine translations that you see when translating from English into French or Spanish or Italian, it's, for example, their home. Is it su casa de ellos o su casa de ellas? Is it suyo? Is it suya? Is it, what does the it stand for when you translate into Spanish? Does it stand for a sub, for an object, or does it stand for a company? So many little things. There is a joke that I heard many years ago about this Venezuelan who had brushed up on his English to receive an American visitor. And when the American visitor came into his house, he wanted to be the very cordial host and saying, entre por favor y tome asiento. And he said to the guy, between and drink a chair. Entre, from entrar, but he said between. That can also mean entre. So, you see, this is what a machine will do for you, not necessarily nowadays, because artificial intelligence is more intelligent than before. But this is a kind of stupid thing, you know?
That's a good joke.
You know, entre y tome asiento, between and drink a chair.
Drink a chair.
This is an extreme, and I hope I've made people smile.
Hey, I actually have a very embarrassing story about me translating. So I was like 12. I was going to Disney World with my family. My uncle had a girlfriend who, now they're married, but they were boyfriend and girlfriend back then. And she suffered of gastroenteritis. Come on, I mean. And in Disney, in Magic Kingdom, we had to run all around the place looking for a doctor because she had gastroenteritis. And we got to the doctor and she says, translate. And I was like, okay, I'll try. Let's see how it goes. She's like, please tell them that I have gastroenteritis. And I was like, how can I say that in English? And I was like, she has stomachache. I didn't know how to say gastroenteritis.
But you see, now, it's a good example. A translator would have immediately switch the inventive button on and say, okay, what does gastroenteritis reminds me of? She's running to the bathroom too often, would have been my translation. Or she is vomiting. In other words, if I don't know what the word for gastroenteritis, but I know what it means. Mm-hmm. So I'll explain it. I'll paraphrase it. Because what is the goal of a translator? To make the receiver understand.
Yeah.
So you can either use the right word. If you don't know it, you paraphrase it, provided you stick to being correct and truthful, not deviating from the truth of the subject. Another interesting thing, when you interpret it, it's very important to have empathy, to understand the person who is in front of you. I do a lot of interpreting in pro bono cases with people in dire social situations. And somebody is telling me that a brother was killed last year in a car accident. I cannot translate like a machine. If I'm interpreting the feeling of that person, not just the words, but the feeling, my body attitude, my voice, my everything has to reflect. Otherwise, the receiver is only getting half of the message. There's more behind the words. There is the actual feeling that is being conveyed.
I've been in trials where I was listening to the interpretation, and when they switched from one interpreter to the other, the first one was really animated, and the second one was so monotone, so boring, that we had to keep repeating the question because we didn't know if they were really understanding it. And that could be a big problem that could go back and forth and cost us some time and understanding. And in the end, they might be answering the wrong question.
I've accompanied attorneys to courts. Courts in this country have their own interpreters. Some of them are excellent, some are really lousy. So let's say you're interrogating somebody who committed a misdemeanor or a felony. That person may be very happy about what they did or very remorseful of what they did. You know, I stole money from my uncle's pockets. Depending on the tone of voice that person is using to admit to that, you may understand that he's sorry or that he's not sorry at all. Well, it is up to the interpreter to reflect that. Otherwise, what's the jury going to get from it?
Yes.
Is the jury going to think that he was happy or not about doing it? So the interpreter, it's not only a matter of words, it's a matter of the feeling and the meaning behind the words. And you have to be sensitive to that. You have to have empathy. You have to have a fast mind to catch that. So you're translating one language into another, you're paying attention to grammar, you're paying attention to terminology, you're paying attention to voice intonation, you're paying attention to the face of that person, and the whole thing is the picture.
Is that why in most cases for trials, the interpreter always needs to look at the faces? I guess they need to be close up.
Absolutely.
Then you have to look at the who's saying it and maybe how they're saying it.
I hope that from what I've said so far, it becomes clear that I'm not being arrogant or snobbish by saying that, yes, everybody can speak a language, but not everybody can be effective in translating or interpreting it. It isn't just a matter of going to the Sorbonne. It is a matter of general education that you have cultivated through the years. I read a lot. I'm always learning. I'm always teaching myself new things because I like to understand the world around me. That has made me learn on subjects, and when I'm confronted with a particular subject that I've learned about or studied about, I am better prepared for the task.
Aura, which is your favorite language?
All of them.
How about this? In what language do you curse in?
I was going to ask that next. Yes.
No, it's interesting because I curse in French.
Really?
Really?
And it wasn't one of your first languages.
No, it wasn't. No. But when I pray in Spanish.
Okay.
Yes. And I like to cook in Italian.
Okay.
English, for me, is the most efficient language of them all. You can say in English in two sentences what it takes you several sentences in the other Romance languages. Within my world, I love them all, but each one of them for their own reason. English is very efficient, very technical. French is very... No wonder it's called a diplomatic language. It's so full of phrases. You can call a person horrible names in French without offending them or without them being able to sue you for slander or for being aggressive. You can call them names in the most fantastic and elegant way. Spanish is sweet and full of rich nuances. And Italian is the sweetest of them all. Also, from a point of view of sound, Italian has been qualified as the most pleasant language to listen to. It's number one in the world.
There's some Spanish that is a little bit easier to understand than others. A lot of others, like Puerto Rican or Cuban, may have more slang or sayings. So not everybody that just speaks Spanish can translate every single type of Spanish.
The Spanish-speaking continent is so huge, from the Rio Grande to Tierra del Fuego. Standard Spanish is kept at an educated level, from Mexico all the way to Argentina, it is correct. But then when we go into street parlance, into verbal speaking, it varies from one country to another due to geography, due to the immigration that a particular country received. For example, Spanish in Argentina had a great influence from Italian because a huge percentage of nowadays population in Argentina, I would venture to say about 50%, is of Italian origins, and that through the century and more than a century of immigration affected the language. For example, as a slang in Argentina, people don't say "I'm going to voy a trabajar." No, they say "voy a laburar," "voy al laburo." Laburo comes from Italian lavoro. Argentina suffered from that. In Mexico, you have the influence of English. They say "voy a checar," that comes from checking. But they also have influence from their native Indian cultures. The Caribbean had influence from Europe and from Africa. It's just a matter of living in an area and getting used to it.
We shared a wonderful past where we enjoyed diving into all sorts of music. But one of the things that I think you have that many people don't get to enjoy is that you get to hear things like opera, certain jazz, certain types of classical music with a whole different perspective. You can hear Italian opera, let's say, or Italian music, Pavarotti, in your native.
And understanding.
And understand what it is they're saying.
The thing is that I've loved music ever since I have memory. In my family, there were musicians. I started studying the piano at age 6. I interrupted at age 13, but I went back to the piano 8 years ago. So music is, to me, is beautiful. It's like languages. Perhaps it's the best language of them all.
Yeah.
And so in that respect, I enjoy everything. I enjoy being able to listen to Carmen because I speak French. But I also like listening to Italian opera. And when I don't understand everything I hear, I go and I do my research. Jazz, other forms of music, I like most everything. I think it has to do with, again, the world of languages.
Have you ever had to translate or interpret music?
No.
No?
Not yet, no.
I don't know if you recognize this song here.
Okay.
It sounds like this is a cultural experience for someone else who may not understand Spanish. But what is it that they're saying?
The cow. That's all they're saying, the cow. So I need to hear more because I don't know what they mean by that.
So I think on TikTok this became really popular. So somebody decided, I'm going to go ahead and translate this.
The cow. The cow. The same cow. The cow. The cow.
The cow.
The same cow. I have a milk cow. I have a real cow. I have a milk cow.
And it's become more and more popular. So if you're ever thinking of an idea of interpreting, it's become...
Interpret songs.
Interpret songs. We'll try another one here.
Dear Mama, teeny favor, sweetie pie. I need you to kill your friend Sir Rostral. Here's a knife. Sore when I think of stabbing, I start laughing.
And that one might not be fair because that one's in German.
Yes. No, that one I don't do. But I've never translated songs or operas or things, but who knows, maybe one day.
It's become a trend these days of trying to understand what it is that we all sing and dance to. I was trying to keep it fun for you, I think.
It's the topic. It's been fun because it's a subject that I love and languages I love, like I said, so you could keep me going.
Do you ever encounter anybody who is saying, oh, I would love to do this as a profession?
Oh, yes, I have.
Yeah.
I have, and I'll be very frank here. The way things are going with artificial intelligence, I see the openings in the translation market, not the interpreting, but the translation market are suffering. We are relying more and more on machines. Machines, like I said, machines can do a great part of the job, not all the job, but a great part of the hours that a translator would work on a document are being taken away from that person, and it's being done by a machine. And so a translator is more and more finding himself or herself being a reviewer of the machine translation, which means you're not making as much money, you're not working as many hours as you used to, you're not so in demand anymore. If you want to be an interpreter, go ahead. If you want to be a translator, think again. Because the world that you're going to be faced with is not what I was faced with 30 plus years ago. Things have changed dramatically. And like I said, review work is going to be more and more prevalent, in my view. It's going to be initially tough because when they give you a review of something that has already been done, they're usually in a hurry. Clients have waited for the machine and have waited, and then finally the document lands on your lap. And they say, review it, we need it tomorrow. If it's 5 pages, you're fine. If it's 200 pages, it's another story. Because reviewing requires time. And if the subject is unknown to you, you may come upon a phrase that you don't understand, that you have to research it because the term, or you may find a term that intuitively you think is wrong, but you have to go and check before you pass it, before you say okay, or before you revise it. It's not going to be easy either. The problem is that if a translator was kept busy 7 hours a day, 8 hours a day until not long ago, and I speak from experience, that person is no longer able to work as all those hours. And also, the rates that you're getting paid, I'm not sure that they're going to be as good as before. If I had a daughter, I would say, don't go there. Do something else. Go into IT, go into computer sciences, do whatever it is. That is the trend for the current trend and the future trend.
People aren't translating technical manuals as much anymore.
No, I mean, all you need to do is buy anything in the electronics world and read the user's manual, the translation of the user's manual. It makes you laugh or cry. They are all machine translations, and they are terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's a lot of bad translation out there, and I think many of us put up with it, but don't realize that there are some alternatives, finding people like you to help actually make it poetic versus just a bunch of garbage and words.
Yeah.
Since you're always reading and preparing and feeding your brain, how do you end up just relaxing after an end of the day to reset your brain?
Music.
Music.
I have a piano at home.
Yeah. And you just play
piano? I play, and I am at an intermediate level. I am finishing in depth. I've registered with a conservatory in Spain, and I do the lessons via the internet. I'm starting with Harmony 1 right now, which is the theoretical part, and also studying pieces. I have a piano teacher. I have lessons twice a month. That's my way of evading stress and relaxing. Or what I also do is I go to YouTube and I get onto a channel, whether it's in any of my languages. Especially, I do it a lot in French and Italian because I work a lot with English and Spanish, but not so much with French and Italian. So I listen to French or Italian programs just to keep my ear tuned and to keep the language fresh on my fingertips. Listen to programs, history programs or archaeology or whatever, travel, whatever.
Yeah.
And I relax like that.
For anyone who's trying to learn a language, do flashcards help? Do the apps help to actually learn a language?
We learn our mother tongue by listening, and that's how the brain works even when we are an adult. So the best way to learn a language is to be surrounded by that language. If you can travel to a country and stay there, that would be ideal, the ideal method. Provided you don't go into that country and go straight into the American embassy or the American club and you surround yourself by Americans, because then you don't learn anything. If you go to Spain, you have to be with Spaniards. If you go to Italy, you have to mingle with Italians and so on. So in other words, you have to listen to the language, and the language enters your brain through the ears. Now, there are people who are very visual. Those who are very visual will be happy to use cards, flashcards, or small, short texts. Or there are books that are one page in one language and the other page is in the other language. So they read and then they read the equivalent. There are many methods. The one method that used to be very famous but doesn't work is to start somebody on grammar, because then you'll bore them to tears. And they'll run away at 200 miles an hour because it doesn't produce any results.
Yeah.
The best way is to listen to the language, to read it, to watch TV, to watch your YouTube channel, to listen to a song. I remember when I started learning English, I would listen to the Beatles songs and I would translate them. I would try hard to understand what they were saying. And then I'd write things down and leave gaps. And then I would go to a friend of mine who was American and she would fill in the gaps. But I did not understand. She helped me understand. But the language entered my head via the music through the ears. Try and go to a restaurant where you only have the locals and listen to them. Try and talk to them. Try to ask for food in the language. You know, if they laugh at you. Another thing is people are very timid, very shy. They think that you're going to laugh at them. No. You don't laugh at them. You laugh with them. Or you smile in admiration, because it takes courage to go and start speaking a new language to native speakers. It's very normal to feel shy, but if you overcome that shyness and you say, you know, I'm going to try and communicate with these people, because what I'm trying to do by learning this new language, I am buying myself a golden key.
Yeah.
And that golden key opens a door to a new world, a new culture. It's so rich. It's so it's fantastic.
Well, all right, it's been delightful to have you here.
Yeah,
thank you for coming
really,
and for sharing.
Really great. And I really appreciate your time.
It's been a pleasure. It's been so much fun being with you guys and talking about something that I love. It's a wonderful world, the world of communication.